Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of the Deep Blue Podcast. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest today, former BYU basketball stud. Well, he's still a stud, but he doesn't play on the BYU basketball team anymore. He also is the former Mountain West Player of the Year, and he is now the new head coach of the BYU women's basketball program. He is Lee Kamard. Lee, it is always good to see you. How are you doing?
Jason Shepherd, it's great to be with you. I'm doing well. Busy, but well.
Okay, so let's go along those lines in terms of busy. Part of being the head coach is the media responsibilities are a little bit more demanding than what they were as an assistant coach. How has that part of it gone with everybody just sort of wanting a piece of you? And
sure.
Can you comment here? Can you do this interview? And you're kind of being pulled in all these different directions.
Yeah. I don't think I've spent an afternoon straight doing interviews and media, and that's what I'm involved with today. So that part's new. But you know what? It's a chance to kind of, you know, get the brand out there and discuss kind of the vision for the program, where we're headed, what we want it to look like. And, you know, as somebody who's always wanted to be in the chair, knowing, you know, all the things, and not fully knowing all the things, but knowing some of the things that were there, taking it all in stride as far as and being really intentional and mindful about what that means for the program, you know.
Now, you realize, you know, last year for the women's basketball games, occasionally you'd have to do something with me post-game, maybe something pre-game. You know you're going to have to talk to me every game now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing. And my wife's always amazed at this, but it's like, how do you play ball in the morning, go and be around basketball all day long, and then want to watch basketball all evening? I don't know. It's just awesome to me. So I won't have any problem doing that and spending time with you pre or post or even during the game if that's needed.
There we go. I like that. All right. Look, you've mentioned it before. You mentioned it during your introductory press conference, just how much it means to you to be able to continue to be at your alma mater, a place that means so much to you and has given so much to you. In just a short period of time, how have things changed for you after being named the head coach of the BYU women's basketball team?
Well, I mean, it's been super busy. The day that, you know, had the press conference, we actually went up to the airport, picked up a recruit, came down to the press conference, hosted that athlete and her mom for the next 36 hours. And it's just kind of been that way since, doing a lot of hosting, a lot of recruiting out of the portal, kind of shoring up kind of expectations for the summer and summer workouts and the scheduling involved with that. And this week, finally, the first time we've really been able to meet kind of as a staff and discuss some of the intricacies of the program. What do we like? What do we don't like? What can we do better? What leads to more camaraderie, chemistry, wins, you know, better practices. So we kind of have started to jump into that. And yeah, it's been really busy. One thing that is definitely new since feeling the weight of the mantle is I wake up at night and my brain tends to be going about something related to the team, and not in a bad way, like I'm still sleeping just fine. But when I wake up, it's because I'm thinking about something with the program.
Well, and obviously you've got a lot of new players coming in. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, also part of the job of a head coach now is to re-recruit the players that you already have from year to year. And you've done a really nice job on maintaining the players that you wanted in the program to stay in the program. How did you approach that part of it? Because these players know who you are, but now they're going to know you in a little bit different situation. So how did you handle the re-recruiting of the current players?
Most of them want to be here, right? There is a level of, hey, they want to know what they're going to be a part of and what does it look like for them individually and as a team. So having some of those conversations were very important to them and to the program. But they're very familiar with me, my coaching style, or at least a level that they feel like they know it. And so since being named the head coach, coming back into those conversations, but feel pretty good about their desire to be here and be with the group. And yeah, they want to play with each other too. I think it's pretty remarkable that, for the most part, they all want to be here and play with each other. And right now, I mean, the outside world doesn't know this, but everybody's feeling good this time of year. You know, season's over. It's kind of a rebirth as far as expectations are concerned. Playing time's not real yet. And I just, you know, as an athlete, they get a focus on finishing up the semester, but building the body back, training, trying to make that jump, trying to solidify their place in the program roster and minutes played. And it really doesn't get real until that playing time becomes real. And then I go from being, oh, you're amazing, to probably half the team not being good with me and the other half thrilled that they get to be on the court and competing. And that's one of the things that changes as a head coach versus as an assistant.
Over the last little while, you guys have been able to announce quite a few players coming into the program, several high school players, some really potent high school players, a couple of players of the years from their state. And you've also been able to get a couple of bigs, one via the transfer portal. Bola is coming from Nigeria and Japan. Give everybody an idea of the type of talent that's coming into the program this year.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we felt like before the coaching change, we had some needs in the portal. A post player or a big was something that we knew we needed. And one of the things, as we've gone through the portal, there's been a couple of boxes that they've had to, you know, as we're doing our due diligence on these athletes, we felt like anybody we got from the portal, we needed to have some experience, some legit college experience or international experience. With Lara, we get both. She's been in college. She's got 1 year left. We wanted somebody that had talent in that production over projection. And she checks that box there too. And then the fit is probably the most important box. We feel like we have a great core coming back. Those returning, the chemistry is really well, really great. And we wanted to not take any chances on the type of character or the character of the person that we brought into the locker room, whether it was in the portal or through the high school ranks. And we feel that they all check that box. So we're really excited about her coming and playing and the experience she brings internationally, but also at the college game. Fits us well, gives us some depth on the front line and some size. She's a very efficient player and does a great job protecting the rim and surprisingly gets quite a few steals. A long and athletic person that fits well with who we have. And from the high school ranks, added a post player. Bola, like you said, via Japan, but from Nigeria, brings a physicality and a toughness that we got to see throughout our recruitment of her. Gives us some size. She's a little bit taller than everybody else. She's 6'4", and we feel like she has a bright future and can come in and kind of learn, but also blossom with a little bit of time. And then the two guards from the high school ranks, at least more of a playmaking guards in Olivia and Sydney. Cougar Nation's going to love their potency offensively and what they bring, but they play the right way. And you know, Cougar Nation's going to love them. And then Braden out of Montana is a pretty key component too, as far as how she fits with the group, but a 3-and-D type player that's really long and rangy. Very similar to Brinley Cannon coming out of high school.
Yeah.
Really long, can really defend, And so we just feel like we've added some really good pieces to go with the pieces we have coming back, and some of the holes that we have, and, you know, kind of go from there.
You've talked, and I think the word you used is exciting. You want to be able to put out an exciting product on the floor. What does that look like to you? When you think of an exciting product, what do you want to see out there? What does that entail?
From a purist standpoint, the ball moves. It doesn't matter what play or offense you're running. You share the ball and take good shots. From a kind of casual fan perspective, some athleticism, scoring,
yep.
A lot of scoring, got to score more. Winning helps with the product. And I think we have pretty creative players on the team, and allowing them to use some of that creativity in the way that they play the game. Cougar Nation got to see a lot of that from Delaney Gibb this year, and you can expect to see more of that from her. She's a really creative player. People like to play with her. But just a brand of basketball that's easy to get behind. I think that the men's team this year was really easy to root for, the way they shared the ball, the way they shot the three-pointer. So similar to that.
We know what you have become, but growing up, what did you want to be? Do you remember being, like, when you're younger, like, I'd really like to be this? What was that for you?
For me, it's always been basketball related.
Really?
No doubt about it. My love for the game of basketball starts with the 92-93 Phoenix Suns. Charles Barkley, Dan Majerle, Kevin Johnson, Mark West, Danny Ainge, you know, Oliver Miller, all those guys. So I remember vividly watching on the local channel every single game, regular season and playoff that year. And at that moment, Charles was my favorite. Also, Mark West, who was a starting center for them. Nobody would know who he is.
But, I know Mark West.
But kind of evolved from there into MJ and Reggie Miller and Dennis Rodman and kind of that era of the NBA. Obviously, grew up playing a lot of different sports, but that's where my love for basketball started. And those are still some of my favorite players of all time.
How attainable did that feel growing up in Mesa? Like, if that's the goal, that's what you wanted to do,
yeah.
How attainable did it actually feel to you?
You know, you always say, like, you're in your elementary school, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, and depending on the season, during NFL season, I want to be an NFL player. And baseball season, I want to, you know, yeah, be Mr. October, or basketball season. And then as you grow older and you start, well, I was always taller than everybody, but you just stretch out and you don't get any thicker. Football kind of falls to the wayside, and your mind goes so fast that baseball kind of takes a hit, and it's not intriguing enough to you. It doesn't stimulate you enough. And the competitive side of basketball, and you start to become good at that. So, but it was always some level of pro sports that I wanted to be a part of. Never really a BYU guy growing up. Very grateful for the change, whatever caused that change. I'm grateful for it.
Okay, you mentioned you're always taller than everybody, and I'm not sure if I've ever been around other members of your family. Is everyone else tall like you, or is this
no,
a you thing?
This is a me. I mean, we have some size. My dad's 6'4", so he's not short. But everybody else, I have five brothers, 6'3 to 6 feet. Maybe one's 5'11", but he'll say 6 feet. but yeah, I kind of got the blessing of being taller than everybody, and I'm better at everything than all of them. Now, I have some pretty talented siblings. We all have a mean streak and a competitive nature to us that got out of hand occasionally growing up in brothers basketball or whatever it is we were playing. But I was lucky enough to get the height.
So where do you fall in line in terms of the siblings then?
Youngest of six boys, 10 years separates us, tallest of the six, and have the most hair of the six, still the most in shape of the six. So
you mentioned competitive.
Yeah.
Even to this day, I still get to see that during practices or shooting half court shots.
Sure.
Like that is, you take it seriously and you try and laugh it off when you don't make it.
Yeah.
But it bothers you when you don't hit that shot.
That's
always been your personality then, right?
I've tried to dial it back a little, especially when playing pickup basketball. Hey, I'm just out there to get cardio, you know, nothing serious. Because I lose my mind if I don't. But super competitive, regardless of what it is. I have a really hard time with people that can do anything and not want to win at it. You know, like, I don't know how you play a card game and just want to play.
Right.
Like, let's win. Winning's fun. It's always better than losing. And hopefully, yeah, that continues.
So you had a pretty good high school career, and that's to say the very least. You won a state title at Mesa High School in 2004. When you look back on your high school career, what stands out to you? What about those times mean the most to you?
I mean, I think the culmination, winning it my senior year, is means the most. But the journey, you know, I think very fondly on some of the open gyms that we had in Mesa High Gym, the practices, the summer team, you know, weekends, team camps at Northern Arizona or ASU or U of A, some of the weeknight games in City League, but as a high school team, some of the altercations, you know, it's all so memorable. And lifelong friends, my high school assistant coach is currently the NAU men's head coach. And so there's a lot of basketball. And this is what basketball does. But I have a high school teammate who's married, has a daughter, and I just saw on Instagram she posted about some readathon or that type of thing, and you know has the link right there, and I click on it, and I don't put my name, and I just put number 30, and I make a small contribution, and within 2 minutes, you know, my high school teammate, who I'm still friends with, he reaches out and says, you know, thank you kind of thing. He knows who number 30 is. but just that. I love it. I love that there's still video footage of it. I can show my kids. And it's just a fondness of, you know, 3 years of high school that, you know, every bit a part of me.
At what point in your high school career did the recruiting part of it begin for you?
Yeah, so, I mean, financially speaking, we couldn't really afford the club scene early on. And then after my sophomore year, a dad kind of that ran a team was like, hey, I'll sponsor Lee. Went to a first tournament and kind of the letters started pouring in. It's a little bit different then than it is now.
Sure.
You used to get letters in the mail and I still have a bunch of them.
And you had to fax in once you decided who you wanted to go with, right?
Yeah, when you signed, you faxed it in. So that started. And then really after my junior, April after my junior year, I mean, I was getting recruited heavily before that, you know, mid-majors and some low P5s. But after that first viewing period after my junior year, it just blew up. I remember coming home. We spent a weekend up at my parents' cabin, and this is in the era that you had an answering machine, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And there was 22 voicemails or messages, and it was 22 head coaches, basically P5 level, wanting to get in touch with me. And so from there, it just kind of basically blew up.
Everybody is going to handle that situation differently. Some people, it's not going to affect. Some people, it's going to be overwhelming. Some people, it's going to give them an inflated ego. How did you navigate all of the attention?
Yeah, I mean, it was different then. I wasn't at the time a big phone talker. And I was nice, but I really cut to the chase pretty quick with a lot of the schools. If I knew I wasn't going to go there, I let them know right away. I didn't really care that I could say, hey, I got an offer from, you know, this school or that university. I do remember, and I won't tell you the school, but there was no chance I was going there.
Can we assume it was a certain school?
No. This was actually, I'll just say it was a military school.
Okay.
And I just don't know if they didn't know anything about me, but this was, I mean, I had pretty much everybody at the table at this point. They reached out and obliged, and I was too nice to say, hey, buddy, I'm not coming there. But I had an hour and a half phone conversation. And he was telling me about, hey, you got to have a four-year, you're going to play 4 years, and then there's a four-year commitment to the place. And finally, after an hour and a half, I'm just like, hey, thanks for your interest, but I'm not going to come to your university or your academy or whatever you want to call it. And so I cut to the chase pretty quick with most schools,
right?
Especially after that point. Once it really blew up, it was like, hey, I'm not going here, I'm not going there, I'm not going there. Narrowed it down, I remember. At least maybe they didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of got to the regional schools, BYU being one of them, and yeah.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong. So these are at least the ones that were made public. So the ones that came after you were looking to recruit you, BYU, Utah, Oregon, UCLA, Gonzaga, Oklahoma State, and then Arizona State, which is obviously near where
hometown,
you grew up.
Yeah.
So am I missing anybody? A couple?
The way I was, sorry, west of the Mississippi, pretty much.
Pretty much everybody?
Yeah. So.
Okay, so.
My top five were UCLA, BYU, ASU, Oregon, and Oregon State. That's who I narrowed it down to. So I had visits set up to all the places. We'll jump into this. Come on my first visit to BYU. And like I said, I wasn't a BYU kid growing up. It kind of had a disdain within the family of like, oh, it's just, you know, the church school, you know, that type of thing. Anyways, come on my visit to BYU, and it's everything you think a stereotypical BYU visit would be. The most wholesome, the most vanilla, the most bland. I won't tell you the player, but my host for the first night took me to his wife's soccer game, just me and him watching his wife play soccer. It's great, but, you know, just painting a picture of what BYU is.
Correct.
Now, all this being said, Coach Cleve, Coach Wardenburg, Coach Toulson, Coach Rose all did a great job recruiting me, and they never wavered, even though turns out it sounded like they felt like I was never coming to BYU. So I have a visit at BYU. It's everything. If they were making a spoof of a official visit at BYU, kind of mocking the university, that's what it was, okay? Really wholesome, nice experience. Then the next weekend, I go to a different school. We will leave that unnamed. But
you've told this story. You've mentioned the school already.
So we'll just leave it at that. And it's every bit what you think that school would be if Saturday Night Live was doing a spoof on this university. And at BYU, I called a buddy and said, hey, this is so boring. I can't do this anymore. Come pick me up. And we went and did, you know, whatever we did. And then at this other school, I called a buddy and was like, dude, I can't stay here. It's not going to be good. Like, I'm not going to be able to go to church tomorrow, you know? So did that same thing. I knew I wasn't going anywhere else. So I canceled UCLA, which you could argue was a bad idea because they went to three Final Fours in my time in college. Canceled Oregon State, and just had a decision to make as far as, hey, do you want to go and eat, drink, and be merry in college, have a great experience, have some fun, or go to BYU and try to feel like you're doing what you should and who you should become as a man?
Okay, so it begs the question then, not a BYU fan, in fact, didn't want to go to BYU.
Correct.
You don't have the greatest or the most exciting time on your recruiting trip.
Yeah, boring.
And then you choose BYU. So how did you reach the decision?
When I think back to it, because I'm a, 17, 18-year-old kid during this process. And when I think back, that's the only legit thing I can think of. I had a great introspective conversation with myself of, what do you want for your life? You know, who do you think you should become? And I mean, because the schools were telling me the same thing, right? BYU was telling me this, or the other school was telling me the exact same thing. Their programs, BYU traditionally was a little bit better than this other school, but they're kind of both in the same boat, you know, having both been to the NCAA tournament recently, but not like a given thing. One was local, one I'd never been away from home before. So when I think back to it, I really feel like it just came down to that conversation. Hey, what do you feel like is best for you as a man and for your life? Because there's really no other reason other than divine intervention that I would pick you know, BYU, given the circumstances.
Okay, so we know that ultimately you chose to come here, but that's not the end of the story in terms of coming to BYU, because after your mission, you still have a decision to make. So we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we will have more with Lee Kamard. You're listening to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. Hi, everybody. Jason Shepherd here, host of the Deep Blue Podcast. I want to make sure that you're aware of all of the other great podcasts we have on BYU Radio, like Her Why, hosted by Lauren McLean. It's all BYU women's athletics all the time. These great athletes join Lauren to share their personal stories of triumphs and trials, and we've got some of the best women's athletic teams in the NCAA. This is their story. This is their why. Listen to it wherever you get podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. My guest, the new BYU head coach for women's basketball. He is Lee Kamard. And before the break, you decided to go to BYU, but you also had decided that you wanted to serve a mission. Where Correct. Did you end up going on your mission?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, so tell me what the experience was like and how it has continued to shape you even to this day.
A lot of Bible. A lot of Bible study. And grateful for my time out there. Got to learn, and I think retrospectively on it, grown a lot more after the fact than on it, even though grew a lot while on the mission.
So your mission is done.
Yeah.
You come back and there is a coaching change, because you mentioned Coach Cleveland was the head coach
yep.
when they recruited you before.
Yep.
Now it's Dave Rose, who you knew. He was an assistant coach.
Yeah.
So take me through the change, and did you waver at all? Did that make a difference to you ultimately?
Sure. I mean, when I think back on those moments, I remember before Coach Rose, I don't think he even had the job yet. He was in my living room, and he hopped on a plane and came down and wanted to know if I was in and, you know, wanted to still do this. I don't think I ever wavered. It's way different now than, you know, it once was. I kind of had made up my mind, and, I mean, they were still telling me the exact same thing. Coach Rose was an integral part in the recruiting. Coach Wardenburg was still there. You know, he was telling me, hey, this is who's going to be here with us. And so I don't think I wavered. I don't even think it was that long of a conversation. Just came in, you know, had a conversation with the family. Then we had a private conversation, and then just said, yeah, I want to still come to BYU. And there are people that have told me that's why he got the job. I don't think that was the case. I've also heard that Coach Judkins was a candidate, but he was in Lake Powell, so he wasn't even around to be able to be a part of those conversations. And I don't think I wavered. And yeah, kind of we came in together, and you know, I was there when it ended for Coach Rose as well.
Well, in the freshman season, you guys win 20 games, and coming off the season before, it's quite the jump.
Sure.
So take me through that freshman season. You go to the NIT.
Yeah.
How was that first year of college basketball for you?
Well, I didn't know anything about the makeup of the team or the league or anything like that. So I'm coming in, you know, really unaware of a lot of things other than, hey, you're going to come in and be a significant part of our future. And from the sounds of it, Coach Rose was like this awesome, charismatic, funny, like tied into the guys, like their guy, you know. And then he just turned into this maniac that if you weren't playing hard enough, he let you know about it and made everybody, you know, get consequences for it. And so, yeah, they were 9-21 the year before, I believe, and we went 20-9 the next year. We lost to Houston in the NIT, and I think to current BYU fans, the Houston game for the men this year, the first time around when they didn't seem like they could even get a shot off, that's kind of how the NIT game went, except for we couldn't get it past half court. They were too athletic for us. Growing experience, and then yeah, just had a good freshman year. Not to the standard that I probably wanted, but overall kind of flipped the script on where the trajectory of the program was at the moment.
Well, and you kept getting better and better, and ultimately culminates in you winning the Mountain West Conference Player of the Year in 2008. Besides that, you play 131 straight games for BYU. I think that's third all time right now. So obviously, the success came not just for you personally, but for the team as your career sure. progressed. So when you look back on your playing career at BYU, anything specifically stand out to you?
I mean,
whether it's games?
Hearing that, like, I just feel I'm a little sad at the state of college basketball right now. Men's or women's, or probably even all sports. But I wear the Y with such pride and dignity because of the 4 years I had here, right? And right, wrong, or indifference, I know that's the landscape now. But there's people that should, that have been at a university, not even have to be BYU, that should finish at that same university. And maybe they think the grass is greener or there's more money, that it changes how you're going to be perceived, or you're going to perceive your time at that place, right? I love the fact that I slowly got better every year and our teams got better every year. And I think that's a staple with Coach Rose, that people that came in got better every year. I think you're seeing it with Richie Saunders, you know, this year with the men's team. You know, I don't think anybody in Cougar Nation thought he was going to be an all Big 12 player this year.
Right.
Right. With how talented the league is, I don't think they thought that. Right. And he came in and there was, I got to see the court all summer long. There's not a guy in the gym more than Richie Saunders was this past summer. And so the way that I look at it, it's just with such fondness. The memories recreated, some of the locker room stories that we won't talk about on this podcast. But that, and we had some continuity with our group, right? That first year, after the first year, I think we only lost one or two guys to graduation, and or I think there was only a couple guys that even transferred in my entire 4 years, right? And the next year, Keena Young wins Conference Player of the Year. Nobody would have thought that. He took a jump. And the next year, nobody would have thought I would have won Conference Player of the Year and took a jump. And the team took a jump, and we won, you know, the league 3 straight years and went to the NCAA tournament 3 straight years. And I mean, for me, in the women's program now that I have the responsibility of stewardship over, development is going to be a key component to the program, right? You're not going to be able to go and get every good player that you want. Okay, so whoever you do get, let's make them better along the way. So when they're sophomore, junior, they go from okay freshman year to better sophomore year to even better junior year, you know, building them that way through development, that may get in the way with how transactional and quick everything is in the portal. But, and that may cause us to not be as good because that's the route I want to take, but that's probably a hill I'm going to die on. Like, we want people that want to be here and work to get better. And when they get done with their time at BYU, however long that is, they look back on their time at BYU with such fondness. They want to tell their future family or current family about it. And I just hope everybody can experience that. And I really do feel, I get a kind of a pit in my stomach for some of the things that's happening in college sports where somebody's been such an integral part of a program, and for whatever reason, they're no longer part of that, whether they have 2 years at a university, 3 years, some even four that, you know, had an injury and still have a year left to play. It doesn't sit right with me. I understand it. I know there's a lot of money on the table. But it just changes things. It's a little bit different.
You mentioned the word family. At what point did a certain young lady come into your life? Because your college career was a little bit more than just basketball.
Sure. We knew each other in high school. I actually got married. I came up here for summer term and workouts. We got married the weekend after summer term ended, went on honeymoon, and then drove up to BYU, was married my whole college career, and actually had a child, I believe, the summer before my junior year. I would have to go back and look. But, yeah, had a child while at BYU. I remember pushing a stroller around campus for classes. when I needed to. And he's now old enough to, he's got his mission call. He's going to Frankfurt, Germany.
And isn't he about, he got accepted into BYU,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's been a
quite full circle, my friend.
It's been quite a few moments of really fondness for the family in the last, you know, few months for us.
Well, and when you look at what this university means, the fact that you obviously played here and you're going to have all of those memories, but then you wrap all of the family part of it where, you know, this is where you and your wife kind of started your life together and your son was born while you were here. It just adds another layer
sure.
of why this place is so special to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, for me, I mean, kind of going back to that decision between the local school and coming up here, even if basketball, I mean, maybe not, but the way basketball played out was awesome. But for me, I really hadn't been away from home all that much. All my family's still right there. It's a high concentration of Comorites in one little area. It was the best thing probably that ever happened to me to just go out and stand on my own two feet, you know, as a man and for my family. Same thing with her family. It's all right there, all in the same general area. And for us to get away and just be who are we as a family, still respecting and honoring the tradition of our family. It's been awesome. I think it comes through pretty clear of how I feel about this place.
As your college career is starting to come to an end, what were your professional expectations then?
Yeah, after my junior, freshman year, solid, started about half the year. Sophomore year, started the whole year, played more minutes than anybody, jumped from 5 points my freshman year to 10 points. After my junior year, the professional aspirations, they were always there, but they became real at that point. I knew, hey, whether I stay at BYU, there'll be professional opportunities, mm-hmm. or if I leave now, there'll be professional opportunities. I think now, especially with the money that's on the table, there's no way I would have probably thought about leaving because everything kind of hinted at being a second round pick. And I ended up not leaving and came back for my senior year, had a great year. But after my junior year is when it became pretty certain, like, hey, you're going to play professional basketball. That's what I wanted to always do anyways. Never quite made it to the league, which I would trade my whole career to make one shot in an NBA game because that was always the bar for me, but wouldn't trade my professional career for anything either. And what it meant for our family and the experiences that I've had all over this globe playing the game of basketball.
So you end up overseas for a little while, but it was in the D League at the time. That's where you went first, correct?
Yeah. So
with the Flash, correct?
I actually signed a 2-year contract I didn't get drafted. I signed a 2-year contract with a team in Berlin, Albert Berlin.
Okay.
For those that are over there, they know who that is. The GM loved me. Head coach didn't like me. And when I got there, the head coach had a really hard time with my size. And I'm like, what film did you watch? I've never been anything but skinny and wiry. So I don't know where you got your information. So anyways, a couple months in, I think it was there 3 months, got bought out of my contract, came back, played for the Flash here locally.
Right.
I think I was there maybe 6 weeks with them as far as the season's concerned, maybe 4 weeks, and then went from there to France.
But it just so happened that at the time there was a certain assistant coach that was there that your paths crossed. And look, the fact that Kevin Young wasn't an assistant while you were there, he's now the men's head coach.
Correct.
You were there for a couple of weeks with him. Yeah. Now you're the women's head coach.
Yeah.
Statistically speaking, that is incredible that those two people are now you two here in charge of the men's and the women's team here. What a phenomenal story.
Well, there's some other parallels there too as far as like Jordan Brady was on that team. He's now on the men's staff.
Yeah.
And Mark Mattson was an assistant coach on that team as well. And he's now the head coach at University of Cal. But KY being here and me being here, I mean, it goes way back. I've been really proud to support him this year and what he did with the team. They were easy to root for. And as an alumni, was really proud to be tied to that program.
Well, and the day that you were introduced, it wasn't just Coach Young. It was Coach Young. The entire staff came to support you. Got to imagine that meant a lot to you.
It meant an extremely amount to me. Those are the type of guys that they are, right? And I don't want to single any of them out, but like they just have good dudes on that staff that are passionate about the game of basketball. I think they feel this my passion for it too, and respect that. I mean, as players, we would call all of us hoopers. Like, hey, you're not a basketball player, you're a hooper. You just like to be around the game, whether it's by yourself or with people, we're hoopers. And I think that's how we kind of all approach the coaching world. Like, it's just who we are.
Yeah.
You know, we love to speak it, watch it, talk it, play it, argue about it, you know. And it means a lot. I think he does a great job. Their staff does a great job. I get to see their work on the daily. In the gym, it's, there's a group of us that play in the mornings and without fail, 7 a.m., they got somebody out there working out and there's a couple of them down there, maybe a couple of players. And, you know, it's easy to get behind somebody that has humility, but also works really hard. And that's what their staff does.
After your time with the Utah Flash, you do go back overseas. So what was, take me through all the stops during your professional career.
Yeah, so that first year after the Flash, I think I went in January to the south of France.
Yep.
Team was Fosse-Mer. Was there for the rest of that season, signed another contract towards the end of that season with the same team for the following year.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I went to Japan
mm-hmm.
for a season in Kyoto. And so was there, had a great, I love Japan, family not so much, just because of the age of the kids and everything like that. Really enjoyed my time in Japan. And then from there went to Belgium, where we finished career for the next four seasons. Was teammates with Noah Hartsock for a short time there and cherished my time with that team. Along the way, had great teammates the whole time. I've been really lucky, the teammates that I've had in my career. For the most part, really good people that want to be a part of a team and not just get theirs. So still friends with all those guys. And if I told Sarah, hey, let's sell everything and move to the Flemish side of Belgium or move to the Netherlands or anywhere in Western Europe, she would be all for it. She loved her time there. Kind of ingrained into the church there and mm-hmm. our ward. It was an international ward, and that was really fun. And that's kind of how my professional career played out. Had a lot of success individually and as teams. Never won a championship. For those that are familiar with it, we won a cup title early in the year and went to a couple championships. And, yeah.
Everybody eventually that's in your situation, can't play forever. So eventually there's a decision that needs to be made.
Yeah.
What was that decision and when was that decision for you? How did you come to the decision that, you know what, it's probably time to move on?
Yeah, I think that, first year in Belgium, had a great year, signed a two-year contract, knew I was going to be there for two more years, loved that for my family. At the end of my second year, signed another contract for a little less money because we wanted to stay there. My kids were ingrained in the school, speaking the language. And then after that fourth year, it was looking like they weren't going to bring me back. And instead of changing languages, an opportunity presented itself on Coach Rose's staff.
Mm-hmm.
I was communicating with Coach and with Terry Nashif at the time. He said, hey, come back, be a GA. I always knew I wanted to get into coaching just to experience it.
Yeah.
Or I shouldn't say wanted to. I wanted to experience it and kind of rule it out or proceed down the path. So came back, dove full steam ahead into it, approached it in a way that nothing was above me, you know, or nothing was below me as far as workload or whatever that looked like, if it was mopping, you know, that kind of thing. Learned a lot in those 2 years as a GA and got my master's. And I felt like in the process, hey, let's go test out coaching. If I don't like it, at least I'm getting a master's. I'm getting tied in back to the Cougar community that, you know, may be able to help me along the career path of something else. So approached it that way. really grateful for Coach. He hired me from graduate assistant to full-time assistant, and yeah, kind of been a coach since.
Well, if you think about it, eventually, I think you were on the staff, what, 3 years?
Correct.
And then Coach Judkins
hires
you on to be an assistant coach on the women's side. So, I mean, if you think about it, being on the staff with Coach Rose and all the coaches that were there, and then being with Coach Judkins, boy, what a learning experience. What an awesome experience for you to be able to learn under two guys that certainly know ball.
No doubt about it. I mean, and have played with the greatest players on the planet, right?
I love Juddy, but how easily he can drop the name Larry Bird.
Oh, no doubt about it.
It's just average guy next door. Yeah. It's Larry Bird.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's them as their playing careers, right? But arguably, I mean, Coach Rose is the GOAT on the men's side. Coach Judkins is the GOAT on the women's side, in my mind. So I got a coach underneath, you know, the best coaches that BYU's had. I mean, I know people will put Lavelle up there, but that's a completely different sport. And so I feel really fortunate that Coach Judkins hired me. Learned a lot from Coach Rose and from Coach Judkins. And actually just had lunch with Coach Judkins today, so it was good to catch up with him. But feel like, I mean, nobody has been under two better coaches than me.
Well, and then the time came where Coach Judkins decided to move on, and you, among others, interview for the job. The job ultimately goes to Amber Whiting, and Coach Whiting gets the job. You stay on as the associate head coach. What was that time like? Because obviously, I'm sure you wanted the head coaching job.
Yeah.
It obviously worked out for you, but during that time, how did you handle that part of it?
There were several candidates, at least to my knowledge, and went through the process. It was a great process. Ultimately came down to, hey, they're going to hire Coach Whiting, which is awesome. We'd been in communication throughout the whole process, knowing I wanted to hire on as an assistant if I got the job. I didn't know. She didn't make it crystal clear that she wanted to hire me, but my love for this place and for the current team and basketball, when that opportunity presented itself, I jumped at the chance. Felt like we had a competitive team to bring back and kind of retain and go from there. So grateful for the last 3 years, you know, and being a part of that and our kind of inception into the Big 12 and learning that league that we all get to be a part of still.
How much do you think going through that interview process the first time prepared you this second time when they said, Lee, you're the guy? How much do you think that initial process helped?
I mean, just like with anything, experience, it's invaluable. You can't simulate that, right? Like, you have to go through it. You have to gain it. I think that's an area for our team this year. Hey, we're going to be 1 year older. You know, we had significant production out of this freshman group that now is going to be one more year older and what comes from that. So for me, it was invaluable going through it, kind of some self-discovery as, hey, what actually is important to you now that it's 3 years removed? Not so much that I did it wrong the first time around, but hey, what have you learned from the last time you went through this process to now as far as what you want the program to look like? And valuing things differently in it, but it was really needed, right? You go through it, and you know, so yeah, it was important.
So as we wrap this up, and I can't thank you enough for being willing to do this and spend this much time. But as we get to the end of the podcast, I just give you an opportunity to talk to BYU fans out there. What do you want fans of this program to know about the future of BYU women's basketball?
Sure. I think that if you get me talking about BYU, I think that it's, for me, why I love BYU so much, because it encompasses everything that is important to me in my life. You got the faith aspect, you got the family aspect, and my love for basketball is unwavering. Like, and it all comes, culminates together here at BYU. I've been here. This place has blessed my life tremendously. I love these student athletes and want them to feel not only that love, but get the same experience or are able to experience college the way that I experienced it. And so that grows the program and the fan base as well. I think that that love for this place can manifest itself on the court, and how people play and how competitive they are. And for our program, just the desire to compete, I think will come through. They always say, hey, you take on the kind of the tone of whoever's leading it. And I hope that's the case. I want to compete at a really high level and get the program to where, hey, we're not going to beat ourselves. You're going to have to go through us if you're going to be successful, right? And get to a place where what we say and what we do lines up exactly, you know. And it's one thing to talk about chemistry and camaraderie. It's another thing to do that. I think that they will feel that. And I want them to experience, I want to focus on driving behaviors, driving a little bit more of that. I don't want to say culture because it's such a cliche thing, but driving how we walk, talk, and act, and letting that dictate the outcome on the court. I think that winning is a key component of college athletic experience, right? It's not fun if you're not winning. And in order for them to have a great college experience, development has to be there. How we function as a team is super important, being intentional with that. The activities that we do together to build camaraderie, I feel a big responsibility to give them variety in that and not just, you know, something that maybe do something that they would never do any other aspect of their life. Like if they don't do it here at BYU, they may never get to experience that again. I feel a big responsibility for that. And just a competitiveness on the court that shines through, whether it's how we are physical, how we box out, how we run the floor, how we play for each other, how we share the basketball. And I just want so bad for them to be able to experience that the way that I got to experience it. And I think that if I focus on that and the player experience, I'm focusing on them, outcomes will take care of themselves. And instead of worrying about what play are we running and what drill are we doing today in practice, even though I'll be fully involved in that, driving those behaviors versus some of the other things.
Anybody that knows anything about your career, whether they saw you, have read about it, they know you're an excellent basketball player. You're an excellent coach, and sticking with that word, you were very much that as a human being, and I am so happy for you to get this opportunity. I'm so happy that you get a chance to live out your dream as a head coach and be able to do it here at BYU. Thank you so much for doing this today. It's always fun to hang out with you. And like I said, I'm excited, even though I'm a very small part of the team.
You're a big part.
I'm so excited to be able to work closer with you this year and moving forward. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me anytime.
You bet. That is the head coach of BYU Women's Basketball, Lee Kamard. My name is Jason Shepherd. Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.